Israel's prime minister has met the Egyptian president in Sharm el-Sheikh. But beyond their country's ties, what can Abdel Fattah al-Sisi offer on regional issues? And what's Naftali Bennett's vision for peace in the Middle East? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. It's the first official visit by an Israeli prime minister to Egypt in more than a decade. Naftali Bennett's trip to the Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh signals a warming in relations between the two countries. They signed a peace treaty in 1979, but the relationship cooled over the years. Bennett said his meeting with President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has created a foundation for deep ties in the future. The two also discussed the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Egypt said ways to revive the peace process in the Middle East were high on the agenda. Huda Abdul Hamid reports.
It's the first official visit of an Israeli leader in more than a decade, and it comes only a few weeks after Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi extended the invitation to Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. It also comes at a time when relations between the two countries have reached unprecedented levels since the peace agreement between Egypt and Israel was signed in 1979.
We have two levels. We have the bilateral level and you have the regional level. I'm quite sure that in the regional level there will be most salient issues to be discussed, Iran and Hamas. On the bilateral, my hope is, I don't know if they will do something concrete. My hope is that Egypt will change its stance because we have to work very hard to restitute the real relationship on this bilateral level. It doesn't exist.
Security cooperation is the bedrock of the relationship between the two countries. And since Sisi came to power 8 years ago, intelligence and military ties have grown stronger. Israel agreeing that Egyptian forces in breach of the Camp David Accord entered the demilitarized zone in the Sinai Peninsula to fight ISIL. And then there's Gaza, prime concern for both countries. Egypt brokered the ceasefire during the 11 days war on Gaza in May. Turning that into a long-term cessation of hostilities has proven more difficult. Both countries also wary of Iran's growing influence at their borders. But the Middle East is changing, and with it, the nature of the ties between Egypt and Israel. Sisi's stance appears to be more embracing.
We have to remember that this comes against the backdrop of the normalization agreements that were signed last year between Israel and four Arab countries. This represents a type of opportunity for a country like Egypt to become more public, if you will, about its relationship with Israel. Obviously, there's a strategic relationship there. There's an economic relationship. But I think the Sisi administration, the Sisi regime, rather, views this as an opportunity to become more public, a chance to curry favor with the Biden administration in the United States.
Bennett has described the meeting held in the sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh as very good. But without a resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the Egyptian leader won't have the backing of his people. A recent poll showed that only 13% favored relations between the two countries. This visit could signal the rebooting of an agreement often described as a cold peace. Huda Abdel Hamid, Al Jazeera.
Egypt became the first Arab country to sign a peace treaty with Israel in 1979. But relations between the two countries have cooled over the years, mainly under Benjamin Netanyahu's tenure. Netanyahu was the last Israeli prime minister to make an official visit to Egypt. That was in 2011, during the presidency of the late Hosni Mubarak. Cairo has played an important role in mediating ceasefires between Israel and Palestinian armed groups in Gaza, most recently in May. Egyptian and Israeli officials have often worked together on security. The countries are two of the United States' main allies in the Middle East, and are the largest recipients of American military aid. All right, let's bring in our guests. In West Jerusalem, Gil Hoffman is chief political correspondent at the Jerusalem Post. In Vienna, Dawood Kutab is a journalist and founder of AmmanNet. In Doha, Mohammed Al-Masri is political analyst and associate professor at the Doha Institute for Graduate Studies. Welcome to the program, and thanks for joining us today on Inside Story. Dawood, let me start with you today. How significant was this trip by Prime Minister Bennett to Sharm el-Sheikh to meet with President Assisi, and how important is the timing?
Well, the timing is a key issue. You know, in diplomacy, it's all about timing. And you see this visit, the summit, is squeezed between the trilateral meeting between President Abbas and King Abdullah and Sisi and the beginning of the UN General Assembly meetings in the UN. So the fact that this meeting was held before the UN, it means that the Arab side wants to push the Israelis into a more serious effort into the peace process. Now, we know that on the record, Naftali has been very honest in a surprising way that they don't want to have any talks with the Palestinians, which is in a way good, but at the same time, it's very bad because what is the purpose of having these meetings if there's not going to be an end to the occupation, which is the main goal of the Arab side and with the Palestinians. So we have to find a way to get the Israeli prime minister to change his position from saying we don't want to have any diplomatic talks that with the Palestinians to start a serious discussion about the two-state solution.
Gil, at a time when Prime Minister Bennett is trying more and more to establish his foreign policy credentials, how much of a boost did this trip give him?
It did give him a boost. It differentiated him from Netanyahu, who held private meetings regularly with Sisi, but purposely no public meetings. It was a follow-up to his successful meeting in Washington with President Biden, who definitely suggested that Prime Minister Bennett have such a meeting with Sisi. And in fact, it helped Sisi as well, because some of the foreign aid from the United States was contingent on the Egyptians ending human rights abuses, and having the meeting with Bennett kind of alleviates that pressure. But the timing that you asked my former colleague at the Jerusalem Post, Ayed Kutab, about was actually more significant because of two things that he didn't mention. One is that the Iran talks about reconstituting the Iran nuclear deal are speeding up again, which is something that both Israel and Egypt are against. And the other is the rocket fire from Hamas on Israeli civilians that has resumed. And there were talks between Bennett and Sisi about how to end that.
Mohammed, Gil was just talking about Iran, which certainly was high on the agenda at this meeting between President Sisi and Prime Minister Bennett. From your perspective, how much can the warming of relations between Israel and Egypt act as a bulwark against Iranian expansion in the region?
You know, certainly there's the potential for that. And they're obviously going to talk, as you mentioned in your lead up, they're going to talk about Iran. That's going to be a point of emphasis. They'll obviously talk about Hamas. But I think also the timing, I think what I said yesterday and what you mentioned in the introduction is that all of this is coming in the backdrop of or against the backdrop of the normalization agreements that were signed last year. So from my perspective, I think there's a strategic component, a significant strategic component here. They're going to talk about regional issues. They're going to talk about not only security issues, but also economic and trade issues. But I think a lot of this is also for public consumption. There's a certain level of media and public relations going on here. That's what I think is at play, especially from Sisi's perspective, right? He's trying to, sort of build favor with the Biden administration, distract from human rights abuses, and kind of establish himself as a relevant figure in the region and on the global stage. He's obviously committed a lot of human rights abuses. There have been a number of media relations gaffes. So this gives, this gives the international media community something else to talk about. And it's important for Bennett for the reasons that you already described. And I think it's interesting that Sisi is doing this despite the fact that the overwhelming majority of Egyptians and Arabs reject normalization with Israel, reject this kind of open cooperation with Israel because they view it, you know, I think with some justification as an illegally occupying power.
Gil, it looked to me like you were reacting to some of what Mohammed was saying there. Did you want to jump in?
Yes, absolutely. The Abraham Accords started something very important last year, and Egypt didn't play as much of a role as it could have. And now, with having the Biden administration putting pressure on Egypt, as Mohammed was saying, this is something that could lead to reigniting talks with countries that are allies of Egypt, Egypt taking more of a role in encouraging more countries in the region to initiate better relations with Israel, whether full normalization or something along the way.
Dawood, you heard Mohammed and Gil both mention these normalization agreements between Arab states and Israel. From your perspective, is that sort of the ultimate reason that we're seeing this warming of the cold peace between Israel and Egypt right now?
No, I think the main reason is that there's no Netanyahu around. Netanyahu was famous for making promises that he did not fulfill, lying to Arab leaders, and King Abdullah in Jordan has refused for a decade to take phone calls from Netanyahu. So the main reason that there is no Netanyahu. But the Abraham Accords, it does come into a head with the Camp David Accords. I think the Egyptians want to give precedence to the Camp David Accords, and both the Egyptians, the Jordanians, and the Palestinians want to make sure that the Bennett-Biden agreement of pushing aside political discussions and just focusing on economic and other issues will not work. And what we've seen in the last even few weeks with the jailbreak and with the rocket issue is that you cannot use aspirin to deal with the problem. You need to really have serious discussions. And avoiding serious discussions on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is what Bennett wants and partly what also Biden wants will not work. It's not going to work to push aside the hard issues. You have to deal with them because without them, there is no hope. And when people have no hope and have desperation, things happen that you don't want. And so I think politicians and leaders have a responsibility of giving people hope. And without hope, things can get much worse.
Mohammed, you'd mentioned that for President al-Sisi, that this essentially is a way for him to curry favor with the Biden administration. But I also want to ask you about what exactly Abdel Fattah al-Sisi can offer when it comes to regional issues.
Well, you know, I mean, I think there are a lot of questions about what he can offer and larger questions about his competence as a leader. But I think what he wants to benefit from this, in addition to the things that I mentioned, and Dawood was mentioning sort of some of the economic dimensions. One of the things that I think is interesting to think about is the extent to which Egypt stands to benefit potentially economically from normalizing with Israel or sort of unofficially normalizing with Israel, right? There are already talks about Egypt Air flying, you know, direct flights to Tel Aviv several times a week, and some reports saying perhaps multiple flights daily. And then there are also reports suggesting that the Sisi regime wants to help reconstruct Gaza using Egyptian companies. So, you know, I think it's for me, it's more about what Sisi sees as a benefit for himself and for Egypt.
Dawood, of course, security cooperation is really the bedrock of the Israeli-Egyptian relationship. How much have security and intelligence and military ties grown between both countries since President al-Sisi came to power?
They've grown a lot because Egypt has a big problem in Sinai. Sinai has been a hotspot for radical groups that have used it to attack Egyptian soldiers and others. And so the Israeli-Egyptian cooperation on security level, intelligence level, has been extremely high, regardless, actually. It's the one area that didn't matter whether Netanyahu or Bennett are in power. And I think the fact that they met in Sharm el-Sheikh is, I think, an announcement to the radical groups that basically they're saying, we've won. We're back in Sinai, and Sinai is no longer the bedrock or the hotbed of radicals and extremists and violent attacks. So I think that's probably why they wanted to have the meeting in Sharm el Sheikh, a part of Sinai. And I think it is a demonstration or maybe a reward, if you will, by the Egyptians to thanking the Israelis for helping them in trying to defeat the radicals. They have not been totally defeated, but they certainly have been weakened a lot.
Gil, we know that President al-Sisi would like to see the revival of peace talks between the Israelis and the Palestinians. He said as much before and after the meeting. Where does Prime Minister Bennett stand when it comes to potential talks with Palestinians, any kind of future political settlement, and what can Egypt offer in this regard?
Prime Minister Bennett has made very clear that there won't be direct talks between him and Abbas, and there won't be official diplomatic negotiations. The politician closest to Bennett, Ayelet Shaked, reiterated it in a speech this morning. What there will be is deepening economic ties. Each minister in the Israeli government has been given approval to meet with his counterpart on the Palestinian side to improve the Palestinian quality of life. As for real negotiations, well, I think it's going to wait not for Israeli politics to change, but Palestinian politics. Abbas is 86 years old and has been smoking two packs a day of cigarettes for more than 70 years. It wouldn't seem reasonable to make deep sacrifices to him right now. That would be taking a risk that I don't think anyone would feel particularly comfortable with.
Mohammed, the Egyptian public has largely opposed normalization with Israel. Is there any scenario by which you could foresee that changing? What would have to happen in order for public opinion to change significantly?
Well, I think Israel would have to start treating Palestinians as humans, right? I mean, if we were to start to list the human rights violations, we wouldn't have time in this short program to get through them, right? So I think that would be a start, ending the occupation, ending the apartheid system that exists and which has been acknowledged and documented not only by, you know, scholars and experts, but by a lot of Israeli groups and analysts themselves. So it's, you know, something strikes me as disingenuous when we're sitting here talking about a possible peace deal while at the same time acknowledging that the Palestinians are being effectively sidelined, number one. And that, number two, the two parties that are engaging in this discussion have themselves been historically deeply anti-Palestinian. I mean, Israel is obviously anti-Palestinian, right? But so is Egypt. I mean, so at least the Egyptian regime, the Sisi regime, they've been cooperating, with Israel and helping to enforce the blockade on Gaza, which is inhumane, according to numerous experts and scholars who follow it, and also human rights groups, including Israeli human rights groups. So that strikes me as bordering on the absurd, that we're talking about the prospects of a peace deal while effectively ignoring the Palestinian side, at least a big chunk of it, and then also sort of paying homage to the Israeli the Israelis and the Egyptians who have been systematically abusing the Palestinians.
Gil, Gaza, of course, is still a prime concern for both countries. Are they going to be able to use this opportunity, this warming of relations, to be able to form some kind of long-term cessation of hostilities?
We saw this week that the foreign minister of Israel, Yair Lapid, outlined a plan for economic development for the Gaza Strip to improve the quality of life for Palestinians. And that's something that I have no doubt that Prime Minister Bennett spoke to President Sisi about. Israelis want to improve the lives of Palestinians in the West Bank and in Gaza. And in Israel itself, Israel has a budget that's being passed as we speak that gives an unprecedented amount to build up infrastructure in the Arab sector. There's an Arab party that's part of the Israeli government for the first time ever that's making progress. An Israeli Arab judge who's a Muslim is going to be joining the Supreme Court. That's as far away from apartheid as it gets. and things are only going to be getting better.
Dawood, where does the relationship between Egypt and Israel go from here?
Well, I think, you know, Egypt is trying to improve its relations with the Arab world. Egypt is trying to, Mr. Sisi is trying to present himself as a new Arab leader. And he has, you know, what he can deliver, obviously, is somewhat of the Palestinians of Gaza. If he can somehow deliver a prisoner exchange, that will improve his position among the Arabs. And they can work on a number of issues. But, the Israeli speaker in this forum, made it clear that the current Israeli government does not want to make any peace talks with the Palestinians. And unless you can break out of this blockade that the Yamina right-wing prime minister has put for himself, and he blockaded himself. It's not about whether Mahmoud Abbas is 86 or whether he smokes cigarettes or not. You're talking about people who are under occupation. Imagine if your house is being occupied for 50-some years, and then I say, you know, I don't want to debate with you because, you know, your father is a bit too old and he's sick. I think that's really racist, even, the way that he presented it, as if they're making a favor to the Palestinians, but that they have to delay, they don't want to take a risk. It's not about risking Israel. It's about ending the occupation, which is illegal by international law. So, yes, Egypt and Israel can do a lot. But I think the best thing that Egypt can do, which Sisi has done, is stand next to Bennett and say, we have to get back to the political talks. And Bennett stood there not knowing what to say because he has nothing to say on this issue. You cannot have a serious long-term relationship without the Israelis being actively and seriously and honestly involved in talks that will end the occupation. Pushing, punting the ball down, the can down the road and waiting for a few years until Yair Lapid takes over is not a solution. It's only adding to the sense of hopelessness and desperation. And then you say, why do people break out of jails? Why do they, send rockets? Because people don't have faith in the politicians bringing about an end to the occupation. That's the issue.
Mohammed, it also looked to me like you wanted to jump in a couple of moments ago, so I'm going to give you that opportunity. But I also want to ask you, you had mentioned earlier that you thought this meeting, that a lot of it was essentially for public relations purposes. From your vantage point, what are the limitations when it comes to the further growth of this Israeli and Egyptian relationship going forward?
Well, I mean, the limitations that I've already described, I mean, the root causes are, you know, all still exist, and nothing has really been done to address them. You know, the illegal occupation and the apartheid system, as has been well established and documented. But what I was gonna say earlier is with regards to, you know, the rocket fire, and no one's gonna sit here and advocate for rockets. But what I think is interesting is that, you know, I've been looking at some of the Israeli media reports. What I think is interesting is that the clock always seems to start when it's convenient for Israel to start the clock, right? So Hamas just wakes up one day and decides to fire rockets for no apparent reason, right? But we forget about the ongoing occupation. We forget about daily abuses. We forget about the violent suppressing of protests at the border. Just a couple of weeks ago, a child was killed, a Palestinian 12-year-old child was killed. So I think all of that is important to bear. And your guest, Gil, had mentioned about, you know, reconstruction efforts or helping the Gazan people and apparent efforts by Israel. And I did want to say something about that. What I think would help the Gazans is if Israel stopped bombing Gaza into oblivion periodically, if it stopped committing war crimes in Gaza, as has been established by Human Rights Watch, the Israeli group B'Tselem, and numerous international law scholars and experts.
All right. We have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Gil Hoffman, Dawood Kutab, and Mohammed Al-Masri. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.